Welcome to the Woke Blokes podcast, hosted by Nick Sutherland from MindFit and Ryan Hassan from the Center for Healing. Let's get into today's episode. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the Woke Blokes podcast. Ryan Hassan from the Center for Healing here, joined as always by the Sultan of Steel, Nicholas Sutherland. Is it Nicholas, your full name? Is that your full official name?
I thought you were going to drop my middle name in there for a minute.
No, because I forgot it. Hang on, let me try and remember it.
It's a good Scottish name. It's the most Scottish name.
Haggis.
I can't roll my R's, unfortunately, but it's Nicholas. I can only do that bit. It's not really rolling my R's. Nicholas Ross Sutherland.
Ross. I met a dude we sometimes go to the Riv in Seaford, little sketchy bistro, but it's got a kids area, which is like the main fucking criteria for booking somewhere for dinner these days. And I went down there and there was a guy with his kids and just like thick as Irish accent. And then we found out he's a member at Patterson River Golf Club, same as me. And so we're chatting about golf. And then he's also not only Irish, he's wearing a bright green jumper. And then I'm like, oh, I'm Ryan, by the way. He goes, oh, I'm Patrick. And I'm like, oh, for God's sake. He goes, yeah, I know. I'm like the most stereotypical. He's a thick Irish accent wearing green. His name's Patrick. I'm like, oh, my God.
Did he just order a side of mashed potato for dinner?
Yeah, he had a bowl of mashed potatoes as we're talking.
and a Guinness.
What's that dark beer that we'd get at the Nash? What was that one?
What's that one?
It's like Guinness style. It was a stout kind of beer. It was fantastic.
Wasn't it Kilkenny, was it?
No.
Was it on tap or in a can?
It was on tap. It was on tap. It was a something.
Oh, no, black. That was Tui's Black, I think.
Tui's Black. Like beautiful.
Yeah. Nice and malty.
Nice and malty. So Nick's woken up at 1 a.m. He's low on sleep. He's a little bit, I wouldn't say he's flat. I'm not getting grumpy vibes. I'm getting flat vibes, though.
Flat. I leaned on you. I said, right, what have you got anything to discuss? And you just totally went, yeah, you're talking to the wrong part of the duo here.
I just smiled at you, just knowing you did.
I'm feeling it's a very codependent relationship, to be honest.
Yeah, you know what? It's not fair. I've got to lift my game with the topics that we talk about.
Well, you tend to just roll up.
I show up. I'm here.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes that's not enough. And when you're, you know, haven't had much sleep and you're a bit flat and it requires someone to come up with something creative, I'm just leaving you out there, you know, in the dark.
When was the last time you got a guest on the show?
Oh, I don't know, mate. Probably, you know. I'd have to look back in the archives. Mate, I forgot that we had a theme song. That's how I'm going. Like, I need to. That was a few episodes back. I'm like, hey, we should get a jingle for the show at the start of the show. It's all we have one. Okay. So, you know, you're asking the wrong question to the wrong person. But let's just kick things off and we'll get this rolling. You want to check in with Mitch's episode that we had on last week?
Yeah. So it was great to have Mitch on. He and I had a chat afterwards. And I said, it was great. It went exactly where it needed to go. We could have gone for another hour or two and covered a lot of things. But I really wanted to hear more about his nervous system. You know, Em's working with MindFit clients now, doing nervous system regulation and stuff. So I was keen to hear from Mitch. I just forgot to ask him about, I know about it, but I wanted you to sort of be involved in the conversation as well. And maybe you can offer your thoughts about, the cognitive distortions and the cognition and the psychology and then the physiology and then the nervous system, the sympathetic, parasympathetic. Because when Em's coming on board, it's like we're meeting and she's working from the ground up and I'm working from the top down sort of thing, and we're meeting there, and it's this really nice cohesive thing, and there's so many similarities. She said, "Oh, I don't want to go over the same things you do." And I said, "I don't think that'll happen. Like, if you look at it side by side, that's what I'm doing, that's what she's doing. But if you turn it around, it is layered on top. If that makes sense." So, yeah. So, what are your thoughts with someone like Michu's?
Well, I think just anyone in terms of nervous system, it might be worth just touching on a little bit of, I guess theory or education around that, because we've all got one. One of my mates who's not in this field at all, he reached out to me a while ago. He might have just seen something that we posted, and he messaged me, he goes, "Why do we call it the nervous system? Like, just it assumes that it's nervous all the time, And I'm like, "Yeah, that's right. That's a terrible name for the nervous system. I don't want my nervous system being nervous." So basically, our nervous system is it does a lot of things. There's information being sent from the brain down to the body, and then information from the body being sent up to the brain. And that's what you spoke about, like the bottom up and the top down approach. And there's a very bi-directional relationship between the two. And one of the main functions of our nervous system is to try and detect threat in the environment. Because if it detects some sort of threat, it'll go into a nervous system state, which it deems, not our conscious mind, which it deems to be the best for our survival. And
How
so,
does the nervous system, which is a physiological thing, how does that detect whether something's a threat or not if it's not a psychological event occurring there?
well, because I believe that information's held in all parts of our body. And yes, information happens in the brain, but it also happens everywhere else as well. It's picking up data, so to speak, and then sending it up to the brain. And then a very unconscious part of the brain is putting us into a certain state, because there's called, I think it's called efferent fibers of the nervous system, meaning that's the amount of fibers or nerves that are shooting information up to the brain. It's actually more. I think it's 70% to 30%. So 70% is going up to the brain, 30% is coming from the brain. That's really interesting to notice that so much is being picked up from the environment to let the brain know maybe what's happening. And so I think there'll be processes happening in the brain, but it mightn't be, it's very much out of conscious awareness. Like when our amygdala gets activated, our fear response center, it's actually in the physiology of the brain, where information's coming through the different layers of the brain, through the prefrontal cortex, through the limbic system. In moments of perceived extreme threat, it'll bypass the prefrontal cortex and go straight to the amygdala and start to sound that alarm system. So oftentimes we don't have conscious awareness in the moment of what that threat might be.
So we talk about a stimulus space response, and it's about noticing something and taking a minute to, we talk about anxiety will perceive a threat, but fear will see a threat. So there's an actual threat or there's an imagined threat. So the ego can get activated and go, this is a threat to my credibility or to my, pride or something. So there's all these different layers or levels of threat, I suppose. If someone's got an overactive nervous system or a dysregulated nervous system,
Dysregulated, yep.
it's going to be very difficult for them to think clearly and logically and rationally and to be able to stop and identify, oh, that's not a threat. I don't need to be in this heightened state and go into fight, flight, or freeze.
We might even, objectively see, like, hey, this isn't a threat to my survival, what Sally says about me in the WhatsApp group at work. But yet our nervous system is screaming threat, threat, threat. And we have all of these, hormones and chemicals running through our system. And so we have a lot of people listening might have heard of fight, flight. And then we have freeze and fawn. They're adding more all the time. I've heard there's a flock, there's something else. But if we think of those four, fight, flight, freeze, and fawn, they're different states that we can go into in the nervous system. And so Nick mentioned sympathetic and parasympathetic. So the sympathetic arm of the nervous system is activation. So lots of energy there. And that's our fight or flight response. So that's when the nervous system deems, hey, it's going to be best for me to fight this opponent. And so that, think about when we were evolving, and we maybe there was an animal, some sort of thing in the bush near where we were. And our nervous system would decide in that moment, like, can I take this thing on? Or is it better for me to run? And in some instances, like, no, it's better for me to take it on. This may be prey that I can then eat. But then other times we're like, oh no, this thing's way too big for me. I'm gonna have to run. And so lots
So
of energy there.
for something like PTSD, where someone's been through a traumatic experience and then they've spoken about it, they've gone to therapy or counselling or whatever, they've got it out of their system on that level, but the nervous system can still hold on to it. So if they find themselves in a bar or something and there's a fight and it's got a similar sort of vibe or feel to the initial sensitizing events that they had, then that's, once again, their capacity is severely reduced, isn't it? They're not able to self-manage and self-regulate. Their nervous system's going to flare up. And so it's that, up here, it's like, I've dealt with it, I've processed, I've moved on. I don't feel negatively towards these people or anything. I've moved on. But down here, it's a different ball game.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's the if it could speak in that moment, you know, the nervous system, it's been through our whole system, our whole body. We're talking about things separately, but it's all very much interconnected. But it's been through something horrific that was a threat to survival at the time. And then, you know, months, years, decades later, that it perceives something similar is going to happen again. And so it goes, oh no, again, and not safe, not safe, not safe. And then our body essentially is—it's on fire. It's screaming one of these responses, like either attack back, run, get out of there. The other two were freeze. So freeze—you know, that deer in the headlights—that's exactly what a freeze response is. It's when the body's completely stuck. Fawning, which is, you know, people pleasing. I'll appease other people at the sacrifice of myself because that's easier for me to shut down. And you know, there's an actual shutdown response in the parasympathetic nervous system as well, which is dissociation. A shutdown response is what a lot of people go through when they go through sexual abuse and sexual trauma, because they literally can't fight back. You know, so the only way for the nerve to get through that is the body goes into a shutdown response. And just understanding a lot of this stuff can help remove a lot of shame from people who've been through that, because so many people who've been through abuse constantly are thinking about it, going, why didn't I fight back?
I should have done better. I should have done more.
Exactly. And when you understand this, your body literally couldn't do that in that moment. Mm. And it did what it thought was best to get you through that.
And that's what we call compounding or creating unnecessary suffering. That's looking at yourself through, so this is on a cognitive level, that's looking at yourself through a distorted lens and applying this should theory to yourself, going, I should have done better. And you're not in the reality of what is, you're in the reality of what should, could, or would have ideally have happened, which is just a fantasy. So if we can help people get into the reality of what is by educating and going, this is what literally occurs, this is, you did the absolute best you could, that's just going to alleviate a lot of that secondary suffering.
Yeah, because then we can just go, okay, that's what happened. That's why that happened. I can forgive myself first, and now I can start to take the steps where I work through that. And you know,
not even forgiving yourself. It stops being about forgiveness at a certain stage, and just moves directly into acceptance and understanding and compassion. So, because forgiveness still speaks about right or wrong, as forgiveness is binary associated.
The thing that's forgiven is my judgment of myself in that moment.
Yeah,
but I get you. Ideally, that acceptance and the compassion, it's a much...
We've spoken about that before.
We have.
Because I had that experience with my army, the sexualized violence and all that came with that. You know, took me years to finally go and do something about it on a psychological level. And felt very at peace with it and okay. And as I said to you, I think once the biggest part of it was that this has changed my life. This has changed my path or my direction or what I thought. You know, it was probably always my path if you zoom out and don't think you're the universe. But, you know, from a small human perspective, it was like, oh, you know, this has affected me. So accepting that was probably the biggest challenge. But then we went to, Em and I went to a friend's daughter's 21st, and there was lots of 21-year-olds around drinking and was playing pool. And that was when, it was while we were living here, and we, I don't know if you remember the flooding last year, the start of last year, or the year before, the Mary River in Gympie flooded. It was like severe flooding. We got caught in that, so we had to spend the night in the back of the car, sleepless, and you know, no sense of safety or security. Didn't know what was going to happen. Anyway, ended up getting there late and then started having a few beers. So lack of sleep, lack of food, add alcohol. And then, so I was in a dysregulated state, I suppose. And then stimulus, these 21-year-olds started getting around me, and they were just being 21-year-olds. You know, if I had been sober and slept well and had a food full of belly full of food, I would have just been laughing with them or whatever. But the state I was in, and I remember not being in control. It was interesting. I had one of them by the shirt, and I didn't want to fight him. I didn't want to beat him up, but I wanted to make sure that nothing could happen to me. And so I had enough awareness and enough capacity, I suppose, to not completely lose control. But I was also, you know, basically wrestling with these 21-year-olds, and they were like, your eyes changed, man. You just sort of, you stopped being there. And I was like, yeah, if one had pushed one more button, it would have been all over.
Oh, yeah, and that's this, we all have a capacity in the moment. And this is the thing, so many people, you know, and I guess we work with people who are struggling with this stuff, so we probably think more of the population are struggling this than probably are, although I think most people are, is that we're so at capacity, us human beings. There's very few that I see now that just have a high capacity and they don't have these moments where they can get tipped over the edge so easily. So many people are just getting by day to day. They're stressed about money. They're stressed about looking after their family. They're trying to look after themselves, but always put themselves last. And then things happen where, yeah, they've had two crap nights sleep in a row. Then someone doesn't put the bins out and they lose the fucking plot. It's like we all have this. It's like the
tolerance threshold.
A video game bar, I imagine. And a lot of people are sort of down here and struggling. And it takes these instances like you had to sort of realize and go, oh, wow, you know, we're much closer to losing it than what we like to think. I think, I know that's true for me.
Yeah. And especially for me, you know, the so-called Sultan of Steel and practitioner and dude that teaches all this. Thankfully, you know, I've got the resources to not judge myself or beat myself up, or, you know, I had, you know, that was, me doing that was a massive source of stimulus for me, and I immediately went into compassion, empathy, and understanding to myself. But what I noticed was that everyone around me, you know, the next day just could not understand. No one came to me and said, hey, that was really out of character. Are you okay? Or what was that about? Everyone just went into this, oh, you know, what did Nick do? And Nick did this and Nick did that. And that was the most, you know, for people that go through a sexual assault or whatever, the not being understood part afterwards is probably the most damaging part of it all. So, I know it's weird. We can sort of deal with the initial trauma, but it's the not being supported, not being got around and understood, which creates most of the damage.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you think of like people who have been through, you know, sexual abuse, and then years later their family and friends will be at them like, why don't you get into a relationship? You'd be so much happier in a relationship. And it's like just not really sitting down and go, hey, tell me what you're feeling. Tell me what you're going through. And that thing, I've done that with friends actually a few times. It's like something might happen and then maybe not in the moment, you'll sort of pull them up in the moment, but then yeah, the next day or whatever, to say, mate, that was really out of character. Is everything okay? And I have never, ever, when I've done that, had someone go, yeah, everything's fine. That's just, you know, blah, blah, blah. They've always go, yeah, you know what? You're right. Yeah, I am fucking stressed as hell at the minute. They said something in a certain way, and that's reminded me, you know, it can be so like someone can say, someone can call them something, and they have no idea when they're saying it, and normally after a couple of drinks, and that same thing is what their dad used to tell them growing up to make them feel like shit.
Yeah.
And then they fly off the handle, and then no one wants to know really what's going on at a deeper level. They just sort of see these behaviors on the surface,
and nor should they. You know, I noticed I had an unrealistic expectation for people to come to me and say, "Hey, Nick, that was out of character. You're okay," or to hold space for me, or to employ empathy and compassion. And it's just not what most people do. So it's nice when it happens, but it's. Interesting you say use that example, because my stepdad used to say, "Stop being so sensitive," all the time. He just didn't know how to handle me. So his method that he employed was to shut me down, essentially. No malice in it. It was just, I don't know what to do, so please stop doing it. And then M comes along, and she, you know, often says, "Oh, you're so sensitive." And it used to do my head in, and you know, I used to get so frustrated and wound up, and I knew that it was associated with that. But I also was like, but everyone's sensitive, just in different ways. Some people are more ego sensitive, some people are more energetically sensitive, and you know, we've spoken about that before. But it was just that we've all got stuff going on in our nervous system. Imagine, what am I, 46, maybe something, 45, 47, somewhere. And imagine all of the experiences I've had. Imagine what the nervous system has done over 46 years or whatever of life, and the state that it would be in. And then we walk around having this expectation to be happy and to feel free and to smile and to flourish in our relationships and our work and everything, to find balance and peace and joy.
Unrealistic. And so that's a perfect segue to what I was going to talk about next. So we're talking now about these imprints, I guess, on the nervous system from these shock events, you know, which are terrible. But like you said, we've all got imprinting on the nervous system. So our nervous system is an adaptive mechanism. It adapts to its environment, especially early on. And so, you know, that's why I'm so passionate about talking about, you know, development and developmental trauma and imprints and all that, because we've all got it to a varying degree. And so, you know, when we're younger, we may not have think back and like, oh, yeah, no, I was definitely abused at this age or that. But we may have had an unsafe environment that we were in a lot. So maybe the home, we didn't feel fully safe. You know, we could have had a parent who had a mental illness or alcoholism, and it was a very unpredictable environment. Or maybe it was school. Maybe school, we just didn't quite fit in and we were bullied and all that. And so the more we are in these environments of threat or perceived threat, the more our nervous system adapts. And so, you know, that's why, you know, my nervous system adapted to be very activated at the slightest sense of what might be threat. Whereas I know many people who that same perception of threat will cause them to go into a shutdown or a dissociated state. And that's purely because of our patterning growing up, you know? So, and then it gets a layer more complex, because then we can have what we call overcoupling of nervous system states and emotions, where, and I see this one, this is the most common one, which is where anger is followed by some sort of shutdown response. And so people will allow themselves to be angry to a certain level before their nervous system completely shuts down, because anger wasn't acceptable in the home growing up, you know? And so these people have so much trouble with assertiveness and expressing their needs, or even showing a side that's, you know, not just angry, but assertive, because as soon as it gets to a certain level, that shuts it down, because we're patterned that way. Now,
they can also go to the other end of the spectrum too there, and they can absolutely lose their shit and go full anger because they've got no control. So it's different ends of the spectrum.
Absolutely. And that's why it's so individual and unique. And I really hope that everyone listening, the first step to this is always becoming aware. And so you spoke about, you know, the stimulus space response. It still applies to the stuff with the nervous system. All we're doing now is the nervous system is going into a state. And so we might go, man, I'm on the way to this gathering or dinner, and my heart is pounding, and I'm like, I'm in this massive, like, I don't want to go, right? Which is a flight response. I want to run away from something that I perceive to be anxiety driven. So then in that moment, we can go, oh, okay, that's what my body's doing. My body wants to run for some reason. I wonder what my body perceives the threat is in that moment. And so we can do a little bit of introspection here and start to understand ourselves a bit. Whereas normally, as soon as we feel that, we're like, I'll just stop and I'll have three drinks quickly before I go to the dinner so I can pacify that feeling until I get there. Whereas, you know, it's great to inquire.
Yeah. And then inquire, but then make an adjustment or do whatever is necessary. And an example that I think I spoke about it ages ago was a client, and she was going for a job interview, really important, you know, in a place that she really desired to work. And so she had, psychologically, she had these attachments, which was heightening her and activating her. But then her patterning and all the imprints on the nervous system would kick in as well, and so she'd be sweating and she did the most beautiful job of just composing herself. And this is it, the awareness. So you feel the heart racing, you feel the hands warming up or getting a bit sweaty, or the breath quickening, and then you're like, okay, this is activating. And then she just sat there and she said, nothing in there is trying to kill me. Nobody in there is trying. Reality is, woman is going to speak with other people about a potential job. And she walked in there and she was clear and present and focused and just, you know, knocked it out of the park. But she took, you know, a minute or two to compose herself. And to, that's, so there was initial dysregulation, you know, this activation, but then she used her emotional intelligence and started to regulate by doing certain things to bring herself down. And then we did a timeline with clients as well. So we just draw a line up on the board, 0 to have already at 50. And let's mark all these points in your life that come to mind where you think there could have been an imprint on the nervous system. And people will stand back at the end of it and go, fuck, you know, I forgot about that and that there. Would that really have affected me? Yes. Oh, wow, that. And all of a sudden it all starts adding up. And then we're like, right, and what do you expect to be doing at the moment? Oh, feeling happy and joyful and peace. All right. Maybe we need to go back. And so the timeline was a wonderful way to create awareness.
Yeah, I can just imagine it's like, you know, A plus B plus C, you can add it all up and go, oh, no wonder that equals S, you know, like,
yeah, like mum and dad separated when I was 3, and dad was bipolar, manic depressive, drugs and alcohol. His friends weren't very nice either. Then moved to the school a lot, and then had a stepdad come along who didn't quite understand me. And that's by the time I'm 6, you know. So everything after the high school, army, all that sort of stuff, it's just, you stand back and look and go, whoa, that's there's a bit going on there.
That's a lot. Yeah. And it's the beauty is that we can, you know, repattern our nervous system, and we can do it by seeing a practitioner. We can support it from a nutritional point of view, with our sleep, with breathing exercises, with mindfulness. All of this stuff can help, from putting ourselves in the right environments with the right people. You know, we can start to repattern our nervous system. And
taking,
you know,
heaps of drugs and drinking heaps of alcohol. It all works.
Look, short-term solution. Okay. Yeah. You know, that's why, you know, people, you know, Valium, Xanax, like all of this stuff. It's like the reason
sleeping
so many
pills.
People take it is because it works in the short term, but it will not repattern a nervous system. You're holding a big inflatable ball under the pool for a period of time. It's going to come back to the surface as soon as that wears
Great
off.
Analogy. That's one of your best. You've really turned up today.
I know. I'm stepping up. Are you feeling it?
I know. But I'm stepping back to create space.
You're giving
for you
me
to,
space to
into.
Express my divine self.
I am. I said to him, because I'm trying to understand it, but I've got my head around it to some degree, but not like you or M has. So I'm really trying to deepen my understanding about it. And I said, M and I were having a chat, and I can't remember who said it, but I used to talk about the nervous system like a rubber band, and you get wound up throughout the day. And so on a scale of 0 to 10, you know, you might get wound up to an 8, and then you might go home and have a few beers or go and do some exercise or whatever. And you might bring yourself back down to a four and then go to sleep. And you might have a rough night's sleep because you're still a bit active and then you wake up. So you wake up still about a three or a four, and then you're going to get back up to an eight really quickly. So it's about learning to really deeply unwind, I suppose, and
Because it's like the, whatever coping mechanism we choose that's going to help reduce the that feeling in the body that we've got, it's a trade-off. There's no biological free lunch. That's another term that I like. So it's like you can take that pill, you can have that drink, and you might get a few hours of relief from feeling the intensity or what's happening in there. But there's a trade-off for that. You're going to have a worse night's sleep, which taxes the nervous system even more. And so you'll wake up in just an aroused state you were before you started drinking, or maybe more. And like you said, your tolerance is lower. So all it takes is spilling a drip of coffee on your pants and someone cutting you off on the way to work, and you're fucked for the whole day. And then about lunchtime, you're like, I can't wait to fucking get a drink on the way home and make this go away again. And so you're in a cycle over and over again. And so that deep unwinding, that's a really beautiful term. That's what we have to do. And it's difficult. It's not
It's getting
difficult. It
back
just
to
takes,
your baseline.
time. It is getting back to your baseline. We had a one of our students in embodied processing this week. It was great. She shared, and she's been in her own process and she's been really open about it, and it's great. And she's got this job, and they have every now and then these conferences and that, and she has to do just a little talk on one of the projects or whatever they're working on. And public speaking has just, destroyed her nervous system. As soon as she finds she's, and I've had many chats with her over the last probably year and a half since she's joined EP. And as soon as it was announced that whether it's in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, as soon as she knows she has to, her nervous system's a mess, up until it's finally done. And I remember I even had a chat with her before one, and I wouldn't do a session or anything. I was just saying, all of those responses, like you spoke about with that client, I'm like, all of the, is it okay that you're freaking out? No. I'm like, why not? And we went through this whole thing where I kept asking her, is it okay for me? And then she got to the point where she messaged me a few days later. She goes, okay, I'm freaking out and I think that's okay. I'm like, good. That's the starting point. And she's doing a lot of work and sessions as well. And so anyway, she posted in the group this week, and it was awesome because she just finished a speaking engagement. And she goes, normally I would be in a fucking meltdown. She goes, ever since they announced it, I was okay. I had a few little butterflies before I had to give the talk, and then I did it. And then I'm like, holy shit. Like, this stuff actually works. Like, actually doing the deep unwinding, like you said, it actually works. Sometimes we just have to do it for, we wish there was a pill we could take that did the deep unwinding for us, but it just doesn't. It takes time. It takes weeks, months, and sometimes years, depending on what we've been through. And we have to stick with it because it's worth it. But there's no really quick fix for this stuff.
The perceived threat is generally anything that's beyond your comfort zone. So imagine you've got this ring around you, a circumference around you. Anything beyond those walls is a perceived threat. It's the unknown. And so you instantly go into, fight, flight, or heightened, you get activated. So when we talk to clients about we're helping to recondition them or train them to have an emotional response that's in proportion to what they're experiencing. Like Viktor Frankl said, if an abnormal reaction to an abnormal situation is a normal response. So for someone who public speaking is outside of their comfort zone, it's an emotional response that's in proportion for them to start freaking out. It's in proportion to what they're experiencing. It's not ideal. It's gonna, hamper them, or it's gonna hold them back, or it's gonna be uncomfortable, whatever. And there's plenty of work that they can do, but it is still. So that it was great what you said, because it made me think about our five steps to change. So we've got the awareness, but then the acceptance, and the acceptance is a big one, and then it's that. I'm allowed to freak out. I'm allowed to be having this emotional experience. I was allowed to have my PTSD moment. It all needs to be allowed to exist. And then, as you said, that's the starting point. That's where you can sit with it gently and compassionately and go, all right, this is now where I start doing some more work.
Yeah, it's like
Damn it,
we're damn, not finished product yet. Oh, damn it.
Not enlightened yet.
Bugger.
Why not pure? Why not pure yet?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I've read two books and had two sessions over the last 3 weeks.
I saved some quotes on Instagram. I like some
yeah.
quotes.
Yeah, yeah. I've read. Didn't even save them. I just liked them.
Or I've saved them, but I never go in there and look at them again.
Yeah,
I never try
yeah.
to buy
Yeah.
I've accumulated this.
So have you
This
taken
bank.
Those quotes in and now you orient your whole life to living that same, you know, authenticity? No, but I've saved them on my phone.
Yeah, they're in there.
That's fine.
For when I need them.
Yeah. Yeah, I looked at the quote when I was really dysregulated. I didn't feel better immediately. They must be shit quotes. They didn't
this
work.
This is Frankel, idiot.
And we'll blame the quote. All that Viktor Frankl stuff's bullshit. Didn't help me at all.
Nah, it was, he must have been taking something that
way. I didn't immediately feel better. I forgot what I was going to say. What were we talking about?
I don't know. Appropriate responses and acceptance.
Oh, yeah, no. So, yeah, the acceptance. So we're our automatic, us human beings, the automatic thing is, you know, to beat ourselves up and disown our experience. So it's like, I'm going to go to this gathering or going to dinner and I'm feeling really anxious. I shouldn't be feeling this. This is stupid. I'm going to see people that I know. Like, you know, this is absolutely stupid. Instead of just going, oh, this is what I'm experiencing. I'm freaking out a little bit. All right. Is it okay that I'm freaking out? Yes or no?
You're right. People, it's we do this work in sort of levels or layers, and it's quite high or far down the road for people to observe themselves objectively. We are the biggest source of stimulus because we're in contact with ourselves 24/7. Our internal voice, our external voice, our actions, our decisions, all of that, our sensations in the body. And it's really important for people to learn how to create some space. You know, we've spoken about you're not your thoughts and feelings. You're the conscious awareness of all of that stuff. So just creating a little bit of a gap and to notice, I'm starting to feel these familiar feelings and they're unpleasant and I know that that can lead to something. So in that moment, that's the stimulus. You hold that space for yourself. And that's where you can self-soothe or reassure yourself or tell yourself it's going to be okay. You can constructively meet yourself there and it's okay. It's not good or bad or right or wrong, or you're not this or that. You don't apply meaning or turn it into something, dramatize it. It's just, I'm noticing this and this is what I need to do in this moment. And then, I'm okay. And the more you do that, the less it will occur, you know, or it will reduce in its severity.
Yeah. One that I like people to play with is like boredom, you know. So we tend to feel bored when we're not doing something. And it's like, what if it was just okay to be bored? What about next time you're bored, instead of saying I'm bored, I need to do something, what can I do? Just go, is it okay for me to be bored? Even just for 5 minutes. Is it okay me just to sit here and be bored for 5 minutes? And your experience will change. You'll relate to your boredom so differently. And who knows what type of creativity or funny shit might happen. But as soon as I had this, because I've had to work through boredom a lot, because my patterning, my conditioning, all of that leads to me getting bored.
Yeah.
Super
how's your thing from a few episodes ago? Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm like, okay. What was it again?
I
had
said
a couple of people
you
message me. Did I was like one of the episodes? A few people reached out just to say hi and like, oh, by the way, you know, I hope you're able to slow down. Everything's okay.
Well,
I'm like,
yeah, it was
on,
just
what?
I'm a doer. I'm always go go go. And I said you're going to go and sit down and watch a movie this afternoon or something. Like,
I watched a movie yesterday.
Congratulations.
I sat down. I had, and this is why I'm interested in boredom, because it's something that I have struggled with. But yeah, yesterday was good. I sat down and I watched a movie by myself just in this room on the couch, and it was an interesting experience. But you know, boredom, especially having Tommy now, I'm trying to, you know, lead by example with him. And I remember we were sitting down at the beach once, and we were living on the beach, and we were sitting down there in our little chairs on the sand, and then We weren't doing anything. And Tommy was like, "Oh, Dad, I'm a bit bored. What can we do?" And I'm like, "Let's just be bored, mate." And then he goes, "All right." And we sat there just looking at the water. And then we were like pointing at different like little leaves and sticks on the sand. And then we made something out of the sticks. It's like this beautiful thing can happen from a place of boredom.
Oh my God, do you realize how much of an idiot you are?
Like, not at all.
Can you hear what you are saying? Why are you leaning over? Are you gonna
What do you
fart?
mean? No, what's up?
You can't hear it, can you?
I can't. I don't know what you're talking about.
This is hilarious. You've mistaken boredom for being at peace and present and mindful and in the moment. But when Tommy's saying I'm bored, all he's saying is Dad, I'm in the moment. And you just spent a wonderful however many minutes just being complete. It was meditating. You were in the moment. You
Yes.
were enlightened. You were just
Yes.
seeing things as they were. You it keeps. It keeps shocking me for some reason, and I don't know why, but it keeps it. When people struggle with this concept that they call it doing nothing or being bored, and if we say go and sit and just watch the leaves for a minute, oh no, I can't do that. No, I've got to do so. I'm like, you are doing something infinitely more powerful than whatever it is you were going to do to avoid being in the moment. You've got this massive aversion to being in the present moment.
Are you talking to me directly?
Yes, I am now. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
And it's such a deeply powerful and profound activity. It couldn't be further from doing nothing. It's the absolute something. It's the entirety of it. It's just
Right.
sitting.
Wasn't that not the point that I was making, though?
Yeah, but it's a struggle for you to be at peace with it or to be comfortable. You're getting better at it by the sounds of it, but it's your just your nature isn't to go. I'm just going to go. You don't choose, consciously choose to go and sit down and just watch the leaves. That's
No,
not on
because
your
like
agenda.
my history, we're talking about nervous system day. My history of going down and sitting and looking at leaves would require me sitting there with my heart beating out of my chest on the border of a panic attack. And so that's how I've lived most of my life, is trying to avoid that. So it's very foreign for me to go and do that, because doing those type of things was extraordinarily painful for the vast majority of my life.
And
There's
my
a reason
heart
why
goes out to
people there's a
you.
reason why people don't sit with themselves or hear about meditation and go, "Oh, that sounds like a great idea," and then beat themselves up for not being able to sit quietly for 10 minutes because it's extremely uncomfortable.
We are such awkward creatures, aren't we? We
We are
are
super
just
awkward.
if we could step back and just watch ourselves for a while and we'd just
I'd
be
rather
like
not. I'd rather not.
that
Fucking
aversion
Australia's
is an
funniest home videos. We'll play some
that
Benny Hill music.
aversion that aversion to sitting and watching leaves and the desire to go and be active and avoid that discomfort. Discomfort precedes success. It's the obstacle is the way. It's the kangaroos jumping through the bushfire to get to freedom. That's where we need to lean into it. And if we don't, we're going to stay trapped in that attachment, that aversion and desire, and we're going to stay in suffering, and we're going to compound it. And it's really important for people to understand if I have an aversion to something, I do need to gently, into whatever capacity I can, without tipping over some threshold, just to start getting a bit more comfortable with it, start leaning
It's
into it
just
a little bit more.
interesting because I can sit and watch leaves now and it's fine, but you got to imagine there's this much of my life where that activity's been fine, and there's this much of my life where that activity is definitely not fine. And so it's very interesting just to notice where we still maybe avoid things, but the data now is different. The patterning is very strong.
Go back to the, because you and I are two peas in different pods. I think we're so similar in so many ways, but we have, you know, obviously different experiences and different natures and different imprinting. And I think I'm parasympathetic. I think you're sympathetic. I need to go and be more active, and I need to, that's my, outside of my comfort zone is getting all ramped up and up and about. So we're at opposite ends of the spectrum. We just need to dock in the middle and meet in the middle and just come together.
Oh no, I have the weirdest visual in my head at the minute.
Why? I'm saying I'd like to meet you in this balanced.
No,
state.
But you're so it's a correct. So it's like whatever. Think about the adaptations that we've had, and so the dominance of a certain nervous system state, and then think about our path is really cultivating the other. It's a yin and yang. We've spoken about this before. You know, it's like, if I'm out of balance in one area, then rebalancing myself is the path, because that parasympathetic for you, that's not a challenge. So, oh, Nick, go and be more parasympathetic. So, okay, done. You know,
go and sit and watch these leaves for an hour. Can I do it for two? Sounds great. Let me add
it. Yeah. Where if it's me, it's like, Ryan, go and be sympathetic and do, you know, eight things at once and that. And I'm like, all right, already doing it. So it's like, that's not our path. You know, we're all different.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And that's beautiful. Great. It is great. Because otherwise, collectively, we're out of balance too. If we're too one way or the other.
But we're in a symbiotic relationship. So I don't think we would have managed 118 podcasts or whatever and had a relationship outside of that in friendships and golf trips and whatever if we were the same. If we were both sympathetic or both parasympathetic, I think
we probably see each other consciously and unconsciously as part of our own individual paths of balancing ourselves out.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
thank you, Nick.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I've sent you something. Has it arrived?
The dick pic.
Not a dick pic. No. I can send you one if you like.
The pause in your face then has just made my day. No, you've been in the mail.
Yes.
Nah.
I've sent you a token of my appreciation for our friendship.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
No, I haven't got it yet.
Yeah, I sat there in my parasympathetic way.
Is it going to be a subtle jab or is it actual token? Like, is it going to be?
No, it's literally a token and metaphorically a token.
Okay, I look forward to receiving it.
It's heartfelt and it just filled me with joy to be able to send it off to you.
I'm going to go and sit next to the letterbox for the rest of the day. Do you ever do that when you were a kid? Wait for the postman?
No, we were too poor to get anything in the mail.
I had this, I remember once when I was into my cricket, I must have been early teen or something, and I was obsessed with the GM Maestro original cricket bat. And then finally, I beat mum and dad for like a year, and I reckon they succumb on a birthday.
You beat
or Christmas
them for a
or
year.
Something.
Why did you beat your parents?
Because I wanted this cricket bat so badly.
Did you beat them with
and
the cricket bat?
I couldn't get through to them. Yeah, with my old ones. Like, I need a new one. Look, it's fucked. The old Stuart Surridge original. And so, anyway, they finally ordered me this bat, and I was like, so obsessed, and like back then there was no like tracking. I couldn't see where it was, like in transit. It was coming from Queensland. It wasn't coming from anywhere crazy. And I remember like they give a window of like, you know, 3 to 5 days. So I just immediately said, oh, it's going to be 3 definitely. And so I remember just sitting out the front, and it took like 7. It took longer than expected. And you talk about an expectation. not being met and going into complete suffering. That should have been a that should have been
I can
filmed.
just
Show
imagine. I can
people.
imagine you. I can just picture little Ryan sitting there getting so distorted and bent
So
out of
angry,
shape.
so
Oh,
angry.
fucking mailman.
Yeah, like it was just the mailman's fault. Like they should be
Yeah.
fired.
Yeah.
Anyway, I look forward to receiving my token.
Great. Great. I hope you receive it as it is intended. Hope the energy is still in there
Still
from whence it
permeating
came.
through it. All right, we better wrap up. I've got to jump off. I've got a phone call in 5.5 minutes.
I've got to go and get some stitches taken out of my forehead and
Yeah,
chest.
Nick got in a sick fight down the local pub at Agnes Water, beat five dudes up, and just got a little scratch on his forehead. For those watching on YouTube,
Glass. I got glassed in the head.
yeah, and then you grabbed the glass and ate it in front of them, and they all ran off and scattered to different parts.
That happens. That literally happens. It's exactly.
Exactly
Well,
what
it's not.
happened.
It's not. It wasn't the skin cancer getting cut out. It was
Have
a
you got cancer?
five member. What have I? Have I got? Oh fuck! Oh
Wait, before?
no! No!
No, quick.
I'm gonna write a
Dysregulated.
will.
Quick. Yeah, before we pressed record, Nick was telling me about his couple of things he had cut out, but he was saying it's interesting how the doctor like calls them cancers and it can invoke in people. Because yeah, that's
Well,
a, as soon as
it
I
can
hear
trigger.
set.
It can trigger the nervous system, can't it?
Well, yeah, we think about ours. We have an association for every word, and for most people, like cancer means suffering and death. So
It's
yeah.
like discipline. It was like people's want to talk about discipline, meditation, discipline, and whatever, doing the work. I'd say 90% of people's association with the word discipline is being disciplined. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, we better change your relationship with that word then.
We talk with speaking about nervous system, it's on topic, but we talk a lot in our training about, safety, and we use memories, people's places. We can use actual physical things to, an animal's a great one, just staring into an animal's eyes, just feeling the sense of safety. But then yeah, and we use that word sometimes as an association to help people access things. And I have one client, and that word for her, like she hated that word because her whole thing was her parents sheltered them too much. And so she developed no life skills. She was kept safe by them and they did everything. And now she's like, I'm an adult and I fucking can't do anything. I don't know what I'm doing, And so the word safety made her cringe, based on that
That's an example
association.
of what you spoke about a couple of episodes ago, that intersection of support and challenge. So there was no growth. So she was supported too much and didn't grow.
Yeah.
And go back full circle to my middle name, Ross. I, for 30 years, had an aversion to my middle name, no conscious understanding of why. And then one day my sister said, oh, it's because it's dad's biological dad. That's because that was his middle name. And I was like, are you kidding? And she's like,
Yeah,
yeah.
right.
And so I had this aversion to my father. So I had an aversion to the name. And then, it's weird how it happened. I didn't take a pill, but I went and saw a person, and they sort of helped me to unpack some things and change my perception on things. And all of a sudden, when I didn't have an aversion to my father, I didn't have an aversion to my name. And it was this really weird sort of liberating, freeing
Yeah,
experience. It
but how
was, I
long
should
did
have.
that take? Surely there's a pill for that. You could take it and happen overnight.
It took a year. Well, it was part of a big collective
Stuff
of
that, mate.
stuff.
I
So.
don't want to spend a year just to get over my aversion to my biological father, who unconsciously runs every process in my life and makes me put into suffering. I don't want to do that. I'd just rather have a
Fair
pill
enough.
and feel good for a couple of hours, if that's right with you. The
Cool.
aversion to father pill.
And expect to feel free though. Expect to have all the benefits of doing a year's worth of work, but don't actually do it.
No,
So yeah, that'd be silly. Yeah. Good chat.
All right, thanks everyone. That's the nervous system. Hope we you learned something. I think just yeah, if you
I've planted a seed and I keep watering it gently I've invited M to come on the podcast. So that could, she's gotten out of her comfort zone recently. Her daughter Ava's been documented over like 7 years this on a skateboarding journey. And M had to get interviewed down in Melbourne the other week for it. And it's being in the spotlight, which is weird for a Leo, but she doesn't enjoy the spotlight. And I'm noticing this bit of a shift, a bit of a change. I don't want to. I don't know if she'll listen to this or not, but I've asked her and it was a solid no, but now there's a bit of a, maybe one day if I come on. So
I think the seed's germinating, and there might be a little sprout there, and I can't wait when she's ready for her to come on.
I'm not gonna, well, we've had melon. I had melon.
I wasn't there,
You
no.
skipped that episode.
I assume you both
Sorry.
just talked glowingly about me for an hour. That's my assumption. I haven't listened to
She might want to go and listen to
it.
while staring at leaves.
I feel pretty good about myself today. Maybe I shouldn't listen to it. I'll just sit out the front next to my letterbox, listening to you two talk shit about me, just crying because my package isn't here yet. Looking at the leaves, going, these fucking leaves. It's so annoying.
Stupid nervous system.
Shoot, fucking nervous system and leaves. Bullshit. All right, I'm gonna make a
right,
phone
let's
call. Thank
go.
you, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all next
Cheers.
week. Peace.
Lights out.
Thank you for tuning in to the Woke Blokes podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe to the show. Also, leave us a 5-star rating. We thank you so much, and we'll see you all next time.